Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:05 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 9th. And there were two things, I think, that really started to weigh on negative sentiment in the market today. We've had a number of stocks come back to the region of their trend mean. And then we've also had the fact that the Treasury yield has begun to moderate. But this is really only a very small move in the 10-year Treasury. I think instead people are just willing to take at any or to at least believe that there is any hope that yields will start to come back down as a bullish indicator. And then we also have the fact that Bitcoin popped on the upside yesterday, and then it also followed through on the upside in here today. So that has clearly broken the sequence of lower rally highs, confirming support around the 50,000 level, and this looks like a bullish turnaround when we think about the more high beta way of playing cryptocurrencies. Ethereum bounced very emphatically yesterday, followed through on the upside in here today. So this continues to look like a consolidation, and as long as it is holding the lows from early March, we can continue to give that consolidation theory the benefit of the doubt. Bitcoin is a lightning rod for speculation, and so is Tesla. And of course, by the fact that Tesla has bought Bitcoin, it has in many respects knitted their fates together. So Tesla also bounced, but it had come all the way back down to the region of the trend mean. So we're definitely seeing some evidence of support coming through, and this is at least a low of near-term significance. When we then think about the Nasdaq, it opened higher, continued higher throughout the day, up almost 4%. So this is an emphatic rebound from the region of the trend mean. It's approximately the same size pullback as we saw in September. We've seen also that a number of retail favorites like GameStop have popped on the upside, and GameStop was up $48, extending its rebound. AMC Entertainment was also in positive territory and continuing to hold its higher reaction low and improving on that performance. For a lot of investors, the innovation sector has been shockingly weak for the last 2 weeks. But then it also rebounded from almost exactly the region of the trend mean over the last 24 hours. That's also suggestive of at least some support coming back in amid short-term oversold conditions. And then we can think about what's going on in China, because we had a news story today. I think probably just to read the headline might not be a bad idea, that China stocks resume drop as state buying fails to lift sentiment. Well, one thing we know from state actions in the stock market, that once they begin on a course of action, they persist with it until they get the desired result. It's quite likely that China is going to jump back tomorrow, because with the increasing appetite for risk around the world, then it's likely that China's pullback to the trend mean has probably also run its course. We also saw that the correct ticker there. We've seen that the dollar was also rather weak in here today. We had the pop on the downside yesterday, and then it started to ease back in here today. Of course, the dollar index is mostly euro, and the euro did begin to find support in the region of the trend mean today, but not in an especially dynamic manner. And then we had the fact that the Chinese renminbi, having broken out yesterday, or the dollar broke out against it yesterday, it started to ease back again in here today. So We can then look at some of the other rather interesting performance of indices around the world, that the DAX index has clearly now broken through that 14,000 level, and it looks to be in the process of completing a more than 3-year range. And that does suggest that people are willing to bet that global reflation is the most powerful trend out there. So there are two trends in evidence. There's the retail trend, where retail favorites are doing well and innovation is continuing to do well. And a good part of the reason for that is because of this massive $1.9 trillion stimulus that the USA is about to unleash on the US economy. So everyone is going to get $1,400, or at least everyone earning in the around the median income of $70,000 is going to get $1,400. So will each of their children. And then those gains will probably be tax-free. And then we can think about that if a family of four is getting over $5,000 in the mail, then that's a bump of about 8% of their income. So a lot of people will get to pay down their debt. A lot of people will be able to invest in the stock market and favor these stocks that have come back to the region of the trend mean. And we're definitely seeing some of that already, that the market is anticipating that this flow of additional liquidity will boost these retail favorites. So we're seeing these recoveries. But then, of course, we have the additional point that we are in a global reflation. In many respects, that's a bigger story. When we look at, for example, Boeing in here today, then they announced that they have a surprisingly large number of orders. So that's supportive for the entire airline sector. And when we think about what that means, well, it means more travel, it means more leisure, it means people spending more. And, you know, we used to, or my family used to have a tourist business. We used to call it opening the clamshell. Once people start spending when they're on vacation, then they tend to spend more than they anticipated. And the airline sector has come all the way back to test the lower side of that overhead trading range. When we look at companies that are very dependent on the health of airlines, like Dufry, then that stock is also recovering in here and had come back in a very abrupt manner in early 2020. We can think about Rolls-Royce, which is effectively a play on the number of miles flown, and the stock continues to steady around the 100p level. Of course, we're still in an environment where people are worried about the outlook. They're worried about the prevalence of variants and how effective the various vaccines are going to be. And of course, there are also these scare stories about the rolling out of global vaccines and what that's going to do in terms of create or allowing variants that are even more deadly to proliferate. Obviously, these are incredible scare stories. One thing we can certainly say, though, is that the market is paying them absolutely no heed, and that investors, having been very wary in the early part of 2020, are now becoming progressively less wary. They're looking much more at global reflation and the real potential that all of this additional money is going to represent a very swift economic recovery. That's why Europe is doing better. It's not just the German index. Sweden, for example, continues to extend its breakout. It's being led higher by a casino software company. When we think about the Italian index, it's right in the region of the upper side of a 12-year base formation, and it's looking really quite firm in here. Then we can think about the French index. It's also doing better and pushing back up towards the peaks from back in 2020. This is another example of a company where, or excuse me, an index or a chart where it had been on the cusp of breaking on the upside in late 2019, early 2020, then collapsed and is now on the cusp of regaining those peaks. So this is a phenomenon we've seen in a large number of charts. General Electric is another one. It had been on the cusp of breaking higher in late 2019 and then collapsed, and now it is in fact pushing on to new recovery highs. So these are all plays on recovering global growth, because Europe's growth engine is in its export market, and it would be difficult for it to do well without it. Then when we think about Japan, well, it's a very similar story. The yen weakened substantially with clear intervention by the Bank of Japan to depress yields, and then we saw a short-term oversold condition evolve. We can also think that on every occasion over the last 4 years that the yen has weakened in a big way in a short period of time, then over the course of the next few months it has strengthened. And that looks to be quite likely at this stage. It's unlikely that the yen is going to strengthen through 110. The one thing that Japan has going for it more than anywhere else is that they have been dealing with deflation for much longer than anyone else. It is the country that is most likely to benefit from the potential that inflation might recover at some point over the course of the next few years. So Japan, I think, is a rather interesting place. The fact that the banking sector continues to rebound is also emphatic, and it is coming off that 100 level. It bounced from the 100 level as well back in 2012, and we had a very impressive rally, a doubling of the index in a short period of time, and it is looking like it is doing the same thing again. The second section index is also, I think, rather interesting. It's a lead indicator, or at least it has historically been a lead indicator for the wider market, and it is now right in the region of its peaks. These, I think, are some of the clear beneficiaries of global reflation, that it's likely to lift all boats. We can think then, too, about the Taiwanese banking sector. And it's clearly pushing on the upside in here. When we think about the Singaporean market, then it's been not doing much of anything for quite a while, but it was up in a dynamic manner in here as well. These are all sectors that do well from a return to global growth and global reflation. The dollar strength is something that is unlikely to persist, and that is something that is likely to also be a tailwind for just about everywhere else. The Brazilian real continues to test its lows, and it was in positive territory in here today, but it's got a lot of work to do in order to really cement the view that we're moving back into a stronger commodity currency environment for some of these bigger currency markets. The rebound that we've had in the oil price has been certainly beneficial for example, the Russian stock market, and the Norwegian market as well has been doing better as a result of that rebound in the oil price. But I'm just not convinced that we're back in a medium-term bullish environment for oil. The oil price was a little weaker over the last couple of days. It's a bit overbought in the short term. We're right in the region of the peak from late 2019. It's a natural area where we should anticipate at least some pause of consolidation. There is a lot of oil becomes economic around the $60 area. And that's, I think, one of the most important points, that if you just think about where $60 is, that almost all of the unconventional oil in the USA becomes economic at a price above $60. Then, if we just simply look at the futures curve, well, we can clearly see that it's now possible to hedge out that exposure for quite a while, all the way out to March 22 at $62. In fact, you have to now go to October 2022 or November really, to get to a price below 60. There are plenty of independent producers and oil companies will be economic at $60. They can go off and borrow money that is still at a reasonably cheap rate, and they will pump as much as they can at that profitable rate. Of course, interest rates increase the hurdle for increase in drilling, but if they can hedge at profitable levels, they will, and we are increasingly close to that point. Then it takes about 3 months for drilling to really pick up and for supply to come back to the market. The most important thing about oil is that we are not at a point where we don't know where all that additional oil is going to come from. There is plenty of oil that got shut in because prices were low, most particularly in deep water. So that's quite the opposite of what we have with copper. There isn't a ready answer for where the additional copper is going to come from, and it might require a substantial commodity investment cycle. And then when we think about the fact that, yes, we have a short-term overbought condition in copper, and it was in negative territory today, then we might yet see additional consolidation. Of course, the easing that we've had in the renewables sector has also been a factor in the weakness in copper. And the solar sector was rebounding from the region of the trend mean in here as well today. The wind sector has also bounced from the region of the trend mean. And then we can think about what's happening with gold. Gold prices have at least steadied around the $1,700 area. We are due at least $100 rebound. That has been the consistency from each of the other big round numbers at $1,800 and $1,900. We should anticipate at least $100 rebound. The question after that is, how much further will a rally go, and will it be able to sustain a move above the $1,800 area? Silver prices also steadied. The fact that silver has been able to sustain its relative strength, I personally feel, is a vindication of the medium-term bullish environment overall. It is right in the region of the trend mean, firming from the psychological $25 area. It needed to bounce, and it is bouncing, so that is encouraging at least. Then we also have the fact that platinum prices have rebounded from the $1,100 area, and it continues to hold the breakout from this rather lengthy base formation. So yes, we could certainly have consolidation, and it could take a while for that moving average to catch up, but this looks like a new bull market environment overall. When we think about the broader commodity complex, I think we're still in an environment where we can anticipate volatility, but surprises likely to be on the upside. The coffee price wasn't quite able to hold all of its gain in here today. It could have been an upside Q reversal, but it didn't quite hold at all. But when we look at this on a weekly basis, it does look like a recovery, and this is got this rounding characteristic overall that is very consistent with a base formation and a sustained move up to new recovery highs would complete that base formation. We can think then also about some of the completely unrelated commodities like lean hogs, and that is now pushing on to new recovery highs. Now, of course, we are in the most seasonally favorable part of the year for lean hogs. So the true measure of whether we're in a more bullish environment will be the ability of prices to hold the gains following a contract roll. When we then look at lumber prices, I think it's very indicative of the low supply, greater demand environment that the lumber price has rebounded emphatically from the $800 area. The cost of building new homes is certainly going to increase, and this remains a seller's market overall. So that should be beneficial for the housing market and also for the wider argument that we are back in a global reflationary environment. Of course, it all comes back down to the 10-year. And if we were to see yields starting to come back down, well, that would be very beneficial for asset prices all over. If, on the other hand, we see that this is not much more than a consolidation between 140 and 160, and subsequently it breaks on the upside again, and I do think that this is still a reasonably consistent trend. The size of the reactions has been relatively similar, all about 20 basis points, so it would have to react by more than 20 basis points to question that this isn't still a weak environment overall for the bond market. Now, if we flip it around and simply look at prices, well, we do have the short-term oversold condition. This will obviously start to encourage dip buying in much the same way that it's encouraged dip buying in the innovation sector, in the renewables, and in anything that has come back towards the trend mean. Just think, for example, that people are willing to buy Amazon in the region of the trend mean because they've been conditioned to buy it in the region of the trend mean, and they've been conditioned to buy the pullbacks. Well, it works exactly the same way in the bond market, and people have been conditioned to buy the dips. So we're likely to see some dip buying in the bond markets because the yield is more attractive than we've seen in quite some time. And that should be beneficial for asset prices overall. But one thing is clear, that bonds and equities are moving in the same direction. And that throws some confusion into the risk parity strategy. It means that positions can't be quite as large as they used to be. It's when we get bond prices and equity prices moving in different directions, that's generally when these risk parity strategies do best. If we continue to see yields coming back, then all risk assets should do well. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.